Hello and welcome to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I'm your host, Haya Kaps, and I try to chip away at the question of who we are, why we're all here, and what it all means. If that sounds a little bit vague, then, well, you try coming up with a better description of what this is all about. Notes on a postcard, please. In any case, here's our new deep dive into life, the universe, and everything. Let's roll tape. Hello, you wonderful humans, and welcome back to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I am joined with an old friend of mine who keeps careening through my life at moments where I have really big choices to make. And we'll probably get back to that in just a little moment. But as a result, my wonderful guest has seen me in some very strange, like, forks in the road. And for that reason, and many other reasons, I'm really eager to talk to them about this topic. So, you wonderful soul, what's your name, what pronouns do you use, and where in the world are you?
So, my name is Carlos Saba. Pronouns, me, him, he and him. I think that's the best one for it.
Awesome.
Got that one right. Yep. And I am sat in the bedroom, in my bedroom in Brighton, looking across a grey, gloomy sky.
Well, that sounds like you might be in Britain then.
Yes, Brighton, Britain.
Nice. So the question I really like to kick off with, because it kind of helps the listeners set a little bit of context. How did we meet and what is your first memory of me?
We met in the Alps in 2014. No, is it? Yes, I think 2014.
That sounds about right, yeah.
2014 to 2015, one of those years. My striking memory of you is glasses and a hat. And cameras.
Yeah, there's always a camera dangling off a shoulder, that's for sure.
Yes, exactly. Cameras and startups. I think if I was going to capture four words that remind me of that first moment, it was hat, glasses, camera, and startups.
Nice. So the reason for us meeting was that you put on a event called Alptitude up in the Alps in France, was it? In France, yeah. And it was the most interestingly pitched event I've ever been to, which is basically like, well, imagine going to a conference when there's no conference bits, only in between bits. And I was like, huh, that sounds interesting. And of course, it's one of those moments where you take a massive leap of faith, right? So you jump into a universe of a bunch of humans you don't know in a situation where, you know, you're discussing some pretty big topics. I think The Meaning of Life came up more than once. And yeah, just kind of hope that the dice are loaded in your favor and that you meet some interesting people. Why were you doing that? Why is that a thing?
I think specifically because of the way you phrased it, it was the in-between bits that we wanted to fill the experience with. And when we think about the in-between bits, it's the bits when you're not performing, when you're not on stage, when you're not trying to give out a pitch or a business card, whether it's in a conference or an event, it's usually you're sat having a coffee, waiting for something to happen. And if you wait long enough, then you have to start talking about other stuff. And that kind of space, that not needing to be anywhere or do anything, and then couple that with kind of perspective jarring vistas like the Alps, there was a knowledge that would.
And so what does a successful event like that look like for you? Like what has to happen for you to walk away and think, you know what, we did it?
Hugs, tears, and beers, I think, is probably the quickest answer I could say. So hugs in terms of friendship. I think a lot of people leaving there feeling like they've met friends for life. So having people exchange phone numbers in a good way, you know, feel like, know that they will see each other again. Tears in the sense of opening up and sharing, sometimes sharing things that they've never shared with friends or family, with the knowledge that on one hand, which is a bit of an oxymoron, counter to what I just said before, in the sense like I might not see these people again nearly, and so there's this real freedom that I can say anything and be anyone. But at the same time, because of that, there's a, I think also because of the space, there's a real sense of trust and safety to be able to say these things.
Yeah.
And then beers, because we just, you know, also we don't take ourselves that seriously. We want to have a bit of fun as well. And I think that element of fun and lightness for us is a very important, but I also believe it helps with talking about some of the heavy stuff.
And so when you say heavy stuff, what is the kind of thing that comes up? So just for a little bit of context, it was organized through an organization called the Happy Startup School, I believe, or Happy Startups. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's already an interesting one, right? I don't really, I associate startups with many things, like straight up happiness isn't necessarily one of them. So you're already kind of chopping an interesting path through the forest there. So what is the big stuff? What is the heavy stuff? What do these types of events bring to life for people?
What I've found most of the time, and I think you alluded to it at the beginning, most people come to these events because they're at a transition. They're trying to make a decision, not an easy decision, and it's not necessarily a decision that you could definitely make by doing a SWOT analysis or a pros and cons list. It's a kind of, it's a bit of a messier decision that might not feel like there's a logical answer, but at the same time, that illogical bit is hard to grasp because it's about something that might be missing or not feeling right, and not being able to pinpoint what it is that doesn't feel right is the challenge. And because of that, it's hard to make the change. And so part of the sort of the core of the conversations really is understanding what is it that that's wrong, in inverted commas, or what is it that's out of alignment, maybe is another way of putting it. And that could be as simple as I'm just burnt out, or in terms of I've just got no energy and I just need to take a rest. Or it could be as challenging as like I've just spent the past 10 years of my life working in a business that I really didn't care about. And I felt I've wasted a lot of time, but I don't know what to do next.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so what is it about, like, what is it about that topic that you are drawn to? You know, sensible people do easier things in life.
What is it about that topic? I have always been interested in the big questions from a very early age. Mm-hmm. I have strong memories of young teenage me, actually just maybe even slightly preteen. I had a map of the known universe on the side of my wall next to my bed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really into just like space and science fiction and things like that. And it was one of those maps that was kind of like, it started off in the bottom right hand corner showing the Earth with the moon around it. Then it zoomed out a bit and it showed the solar system. Then it zoomed out a bit and then it showed the Milky Way. And then it zoomed out a bit and then it showed the local supercluster. And then it then you could see basically there was this really invisible dot on an invisible dot, which was our planet.
Yeah.
And I would be stood on it somewhere, and that like blew my mind. It's like what if that's the size of me compared to everything, what's this all about?
Yeah, I had that very moment actually driving back from the mountains the other day, and I was, you know, it was a 4-hour drive, so it felt like it was really far. And, you know, there's like fields and cows and humans and idiots in cars and everything, me being one of them. But the big realization it has, like, I drove for so long, and, you know, on that single pixel blue dot that you see on those types of maps, you know, I drove like a fraction of a pixel. And I feel like the perspective of just like, hey, you know, your problems can feel so fucking big, And don't be an idiot, right? There is so much more to what's going out there. And I feel like, especially when I get stressed out, perspective is the first thing that goes out the window, right? It's like, it's impossible to know what is important and what isn't, which means that either nothing is important and you fall into apathy and depression, or everything is important and you fall into this anxious stress, or I do anyway. I fall into this anxious stress mode where I'm like, I can't prioritize. And then, you know, you wake up one morning and your entire kitchen is full of dishes everywhere because you wasn't able to prioritize doing dishes, that kind of thing. And I find myself in those places with some regularity. And the only way I know to shake me out of that is finding perspective. And I think that's exactly what happened. So I've been along to two of these kind of altitude type events, one in France and one up in Oregon, was it? Washington?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. Up north somewhere. Yeah, totally. And both times I made, as you say, friends for life. And I kind of bared my soul and figured out some big, important questions. And it was just such a... It is rare that you get to experience that level of magic, like, once in a lifetime. And it happened twice, like both times, 100%, 2 out of 2, in these universes. And so you and your coworker, partner, human, Lawrence, are really good at just taking a risk. I think in the opening round for the one up in Oregon, you guys said something along the lines of, like, we don't know what the fuck we're doing. We collected a bunch of people that seemed like they had something to kind of add to it and just went for it. And that takes such faith. Like, that level of uncontrol takes such incredible faith in your selection of people and the mission you're on. I just feel like, I mean, I wouldn't have it in me to take that level of, like, that kind of leap of faith. Where does that come from?
It's an interesting question, that one. I'm surprised when I hear that. Firstly, coming from you, because I can't imagine why you wouldn't have not only the faith but the presence to be able to hold that kind of space. And yes, I never, for instance, I don't think of it as faith for whatever reason, and I'm trying to understand why it's because on one hand you're correct, there is a faith, there's a belief that it will work. But the way I look at it is that it works because we need it to work. It doesn't work because we're trying to make it work or we're leading it to a place where it works. It works because we're there because we need it as much as everyone else there. And so we need to make sure that we get what we need. And so when we're clear about what we need, then we know what needs to be there for that to need to be met. And the reason why everyone else is there is because we identified that they have the same need.
Yeah. You've just touched on two points that I think are really crucial to understanding kind of the meaning of life type questions. One is big decisions. And so you highlighted that it's hard to know what the question even is. And so that's an important part of that. But I feel like to make big decisions in a way that makes sense, like big life and death, like big important decisions, you need to have some sort of a process, right? And I think if the decision is big enough, then the process ultimately boils down to, you know, life and death and the meaning of life. Because otherwise, you know, how do you even make decisions? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And the other piece of that is around... feeling into that, like, how do you know what the right decision is? And since this is kind of your wheelhouse, do you have any thoughts on, like how do you know? How do you make big decisions, Carlos?
So this is a journey I've been on myself in terms of trying to understand how I make decisions. Because at one level, I pride myself in being... quite how to put it without sounding like an arrogant prat, intellectually confident. I feel that I can give me the data, give me the time, I'll be able to work out what's going on. And so if there's a complex problem that needs to be solved, I don't doubt that I won't be able to solve it, or that I will be able to solve it. But I have come to understand that while I believe that's how I make decisions, that isn't really how I make or how I've made the big decisions in my life. Because if I look at them from a pros and cons way of looking at it, take career or take decisions to even quit a PhD, not quit a PhD, but to finish a PhD and not continue with it in terms of academia, those weren't decisions based on logic. Even the idea of doing a PhD was not based on logic. It was based on, this is curious, this is interesting, this is an opportunity in front of me. What else would I do other than this? And so it was most of my decisions, if not all of my decisions in life, if I'm honest, have been me feeling into what feels right.
Right. And so when you're saying that, you're talking about intellectual decisions, but you're also talking about feelings. Are those the same to you, or is there two different processes or two different approaches that happen in that space?
The way I look at it is that I look at the situation or decision intellectually, but then I'll probably, if it doesn't feel right, I will probably go against it. And when I do follow intellectually what that decision should be, and it doesn't feel right, that's when I get into trouble, or that's when I get into have an issue. When I do something because it feels right to me, then my intellect does some really great Aikido and then post-rationalizes why that decision was the best decision anyway in the first place.
Totally, yeah.
So I think intellectually, if it was coming down to, for instance, choosing a mortgage and one interest rate is higher than the other, then I will logically go with the lower interest rate.
Yeah. You're not like, hey, I like the color of Halifax better.
Exactly.
I'm doing it.
Yes. But then I buy Apple products and I buy certain types of clothes, and those are not necessarily intellectually driven as decisions, as much as I would love to say, you know, the ecosystem all combined into one thing makes it so much easier for my phone to connect to my iPad.
Well, I think for a lot of these things, they're essentially commodity goods, right? Trainers are trainers are trainers. And yes, they look slightly different, and yeah, they work, but ultimately they keep your feet safe and hopefully dry, and that's good, right? So I feel like in those universes, you know, there are choices that are better than others, but there aren't choices that you'll deeply regret, right? And even with some pretty big choices, like buying a car or, you know, yes, are some cars better than others? Sure. But do they ultimately fulfill the same purpose, which is get you from point A to point B? Probably. Now, where it becomes interesting is if that, say, a car purchase also has another feature for you or another function. And that might be looking cool when you go pick up your kids at school. Or it might be, you know, impressing your friends. Or it might be just you feeling really good about yourself when you drive it because the driving performance is better or what have you. And for some of those things, you can go, okay, yes, this Nissan is really cheap to run, etc., but I really want a damn BMW, right? And those things are kind of neither here nor there, because also those choices aren't permanent. You can always sell your car and buy a new one. But I feel like for really big life decisions, like choosing to enter into a relationship or ending it, or having children, or career choices, or that kind of stuff, that's where, you know, you can have a spreadsheet as long as you as Google Docs will let you, but that is not really where your emotional universe happens. And you mentioned this already, right? You do the logical analysis and then you check in with yourself. So where in your body do you feel that? Like what is your spidey sense that make you feel like, yeah, this is definitely the right choice, or holy dogs, run the other way?
Interesting question. Yeah, when it comes to a right decision, I still haven't pinpointed exactly where that is. I get a sense that it's quite low down in the belly somewhere. There's like a satisfied, grounded feeling, like a solidity. When it comes to not great decisions or taking a path that doesn't feel right, it's usually high in the chest, even around the throat, kind of nearly a constricting, strangling type feeling, I would say. Nearly, yeah, there's that kind of like, I think maybe that's a good way of looking at kind of a suffocating nature to it.
Mm-hmm. So the extremes I'm hearing are suffocation on the negative side and this grounded feeling, and it's kind of like being maybe in balance. Is that right?
I would say the thing that springs to mind is, you know, those toys that were like you can't knock over because they're just like the little, that kind of thing. You're not going to knock me over. Like, it's quite solid. So it's you can wobble, but you'll always go back to center.
Yeah. Well, and I happen to know that you're a relatively accomplished martial artist, right? And so I feel like you have this sense in your body in general around at which point you are in a position of strength and unknockoverable. And at which point you're like, no, if my opponent does the right thing right now, I am screwed because I'm not ready for whatever comes next. And I've seen you do some, remind me what sport you do?
It's Kung Fu.
Kung Fu. I've seen you do like some demos and led some sessions. And I feel like that is where you are most in flow. Right? Where you're really just in your body and sensing, like, and you know, call it the chi, call it the moving of energy, call it you just being really embodied. And I can't help but feel like the way you describe your decision-making process isn't dissimilar. Does that sound right?
Yes and no, I would say. I think... So I'll start with the no. The no in the sense that when I think of how I flow or I feel flow with Kung Fu. And I might contradict myself in a minute, but I'm just going to go with it.
I mean, that's how these conversations go. I have a good friend of mine who often says, I might be wrong, but I'm not confused. And it just makes me very happy.
Exactly. Got to go with the flow. It's like an emergent journey. So... with Kung Fu, it's the flow has come from many years of repetition and doing the same movements again and again and again, and then building on top of that with other movements until it starts to become this kind of complex data set of movements that are just impossible to see individually anymore, but they will come out just instinctively. And so when it comes to then coming to a situation or whether it's in combat or whether it's a form, the body just ends up moving in the way it needs to move without thought. And so that movement without thought into a position that is right is the embodied decision making that comes from an authentic place. How it emerges, how that's come about in Kung Fu, I know it's come about from practice. In making big life decisions, it isn't like I've practiced making lots of big decisions, or maybe I have over time, but it doesn't feel like as deliberate and as accomplished as my martial arts.
Yeah, no, I completely feel that. I'm not, you know, I've done a bunch of martial arts, but I'm not nearly as accomplished as you are. But what I do often find is that I recognize, like when I try a new move or I try a new kind of kata type thing, even though the movements are new, the feeling of like, oh yeah, I got this. That piece is similar, right? It's not that my you know, brainstem knows these movements. I'm not moving from memory, but that feeling of like, oh, I got that slightly off. That didn't feel quite right. And like, oh no, I am at the end of this particular movement. I am right there in my, like, grounded in my base stance. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to do whatever happens next. And I recognize that in decision-making, where I don't necessarily know exactly what it was, but I'm back to that, like, deeply rooted feeling that I think is really interesting. The reason I harp on about this is that I am generally not in my body. I'm a very cerebral human being. And like getting myself into my body takes a long ass time. I've done a bit of yoga. I've done a bit of like martial arts. I like moving with people, whether that is in dance or sexually. And I feel like in those moments, I can really feel like, oh yeah, I'm in my body now. That is weird to me, right? And in moments of big decisions, as you say, you can post-rationalize all you want, but really your body tells you whether or not you are on the right track or not.
Yeah. What springs to mind there is, so if I take the, you know, what you're saying about with the martial arts or the movements, I think with the training and with the repetition and with the awareness of how your body finds groundedness, you start to recognize the points of balance. And so I think that's something that over time, through our bad decision making and our good decision making, we if we listen well enough, I think that's when we start feeling that those, when we come to new situations, we start to feel into where what's grounded and what's balanced.
Yeah.
I do wonder though, and this is something that I've been thinking about over the past few years, is sometimes our bodies give us signals that we don't understand because of things that we haven't really processed, and would lead us maybe to doing something that we should do, but because of a past, that's for want of a better word, trauma or experience, we don't do that thing. And so that's where I believe sometimes it's important for our mind to kick in as well, and sometimes override what the body doesn't want to do.
Do you have a clear picture of what your purpose is? Like, why are you doing the things you do? What are you hoping to drive forward? What are you trying to accomplish?
I have always believed that each of us is capable of anything, given the right opportunities and enough love. And I always thought I was going to be a teacher, a school teacher, because I really valued and believed and enjoyed the pursuit of knowledge. I found it exhilarating, the epiphanies and the awareness and the understanding you would get through just studying a topic and then discovering, now I understand why this thing works. And because of that, I can then use that knowledge in different ways. And I strongly believe that many people have not been served well because they haven't had the right learning experience, whether that's intellectually or emotionally. And I feel that my purpose at the moment, whether it's with my kids or with our community, is to be able to create those spaces where the right kind of learning can happen for the people who are there.
And so you mentioned you had always wanted to be a teacher, and, you know, maybe that came up specifically as a school teacher type thing, but you are a teacher.
I've only recently come to terms with the fact that I've come round to that, in a sense, full circle.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when you described what you wanted to do, you know, you should listen back to it, your own description. You're describing what you're doing right now, you know, enticing education, people having aha moments. And yeah, they're maybe not learning about the aha moment of, you know, something in World War II history or whatever it is you did want to teach. But people are finding real connection with themselves and with their purpose and with their drive in the type of workshops and sessions and you know, the things you do in life. Is my, you know, outside observation.
And I think it's a very valid one, and it's something that I'm coming to terms with, because for a while I wasn't sure. I had a very fixed conception of what teaching was, and I'm becoming more aware that maybe even the word teaching isn't necessarily the thing I was looking for. It was essentially creating space for epiphanies. And so whether that's intellectually learning algebra or engineering, or like you said, World War II history, or whether it's like, shit, I don't need to do that anymore. Maybe I should do something else. Or shit, that's why I don't like doing that. And I just, and the gift that I'm able to give is people to just have space to reflect on that and to really understand and to give them time to just talk it out or just be with it. And that's where what I've learned along this journey of building the Happy Startup School, being part of it more than anything else, is the value of space, not to fill it with solutions or trying to work things out, but to trust the uncertainty and near chaos of not trying to do anything and just going with the flow, like this conversation.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people fall into the trap to think that solutions are in action. Like, you can read all the books, you can do listen to all the podcasts, you can have all the conversations, but there's this integration piece that often misses for people. And that is where a lot of the, you know, having that spaciousness, whether that means going for a walk or meditating or getting lost on something else. But if you don't ever integrate, then nothing ever, you don't have a chance to say, okay, this is the landscape, but I now have a new piece of information that doesn't fit in this landscape. And the temptation is to just jettison it. You go, well, that doesn't fit with my worldview. I'm going to ignore it. But as you are talking about landing in a place of understanding your own drive better, you know, the teacher versus the... It feels like there has been a recent process for you where you've been in the weeds. You've come to a epiphany or a conclusion, or at least a crystallization of what your life's mission is. Was that a conscious process? And if so, what was your process?
I wouldn't say there was a deliberate process. It was very much just a journey of just doing and also getting lost for a while, not knowing exactly what I wanted to do or what my role was. And it's been a process and a journey. Well, actually, it isn't a process because I don't think it's something that's like a recipe list that you can do again. It has been a journey of meeting people like yourself, going on trips like we've been on, talking to people from all walks of life, from different perspectives, different ways of looking at the world, and then questioning my own worldview and what guides my actions and my reactions. And then through that, personally, I discovered the need to always be right. I discovered the need to not only that, never be wrong, which I think was even more powerful. And I discovered that actually if I could let go of those two, I could actually never be wrong and always be right. Because I could just trust in myself to go into a situation, whether it's a retreat like we've been on, a coaching call with someone, starting a new project with our business, and trust that we will find an answer along the way, as long as we don't try too hard to be right.
Yeah. You mentioned the self or myself or I a few times. I find that occasionally I really struggle with that. Like, where do I begin and where do I end? Or what is the thing that makes me me, in the context both of me in a body, but also in terms of me and the communities and the wider world and my relationships around you? Do you have if I were to ask you, what is the I in Carlos? Do you have a clear picture of that, or like a felt sense of who you are?
I have, I've got a clear sense. So the way I would look at it, I am my mother, I am my father, I am my brother and sister, I am my first school, I am the first time I landed in the UK when I was 3. I am the bullies who used to tease me for looking Chinese in a predominantly white school. And so I have an awareness that I am a culmination of experiences that have blended into a person who has responded and reacted to the world in certain ways. But at the same time, I also realize I am something below that, that recognizes all those things that are still part of me, but doesn't have to follow what those things have potentially or might potentially push me to do. And so from now, where I'm at on my journey, I feel I can recognize that I can be stubborn, or I can be defensive when people tell me what to do, or I can be fearful of change, or I can be angry for no reason when my freedoms are restricted. And I can also do none of those things if I choose to. And so I've recognized that they are part of me in terms of how I have move through the world, but I'm also recognizing that I can say no to them as well. I can't ever get rid of them. I can't ever say I'm never going to be that kind of person, because that's not me. But I also believe I can build up the ability to choose not to do that when I don't want to.
And so what I'm hearing is you describing a combination of nature and nurture. So, you know, you mentioned you are your parents, which, you know, could be both, but also you are your lived experience, right? You mentioned bullies, which, I'm not going to lie, that makes me constrict, because I have been struggling with the same thing of like, what power do these people have over me? Even now, 25, 30 years later, when, you know, they probably haven't thought about me for 20 years and they're in my mind a lot more than maybe they should be. And I think there's something interesting in that, in knowing that these people, you know, are a part of you and are part of the I, as you describe it, but also only in kind of an abstract sense, only because you let them, kind of thing.
I think I am a little uncomfortable with the idea I let them. And I let them, so on one level I can understand, I let them in the sense that I've let them affect the way I am. But then I also think of the 5-year-old or 7-year-old me is like, I wasn't letting anyone do anything. It was happening to me at the time. And so, yeah, there's for me, there's an aspect here of, I think the word compassion springs to mind. Compassion for that, are scared or tired or proud 12-year-old, 18-year-old, 5-year-old, whatever that stage of life, I was feeling those feelings. And holding them close, while at the same time not having them dictate what I do now.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And so when you say compassion, is that, I think I heard you say compassion with yourself. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's real, man. That's super real. And how does that, so I guess if that is all part of the I guess that kind of ties into when the I was formed and, you know, what happens after your body dies. Like, does the I continue in your universe, or is that something that is around for as long as your body is around, and once you are gone, the I is gone?
I oscillate and vacillate between various thoughts around this. At one level, I have a very materialistic view of the world. I am a collection, a complex, highly complex collection of atoms and subatomic particles that have somehow danced together to then form this body. But when it comes to it, and I pass away and sink into the earth, and the sun explodes and vaporizes this planet, we will turn back to particles, atoms, subatomic particles, quarks, neutrinos, whatever we are made of. And so where am I in that soup and gas of stuff? I don't think I'm anywhere. I don't think I exist. I think with that mechanistic view, my consciousness, my awareness of me is an emergent property of a complex series of interactions in my body. Is there a soul there? My gut feeling at the moment is there's not. I don't think there's an eternal soul. I believe these are ideas that we have created to protect ourselves from the madness of infinity.
And I mean, it's fun. It's, oh man, you just said the madness of infinity, and that sent the hairs on my arm like standing up, because I think I said out loud to somebody the other day, it's like, look, if you think you understand what infinity is and you're not fucking petrified, you don't understand what infinity is. Like, infinity is so big and so all encompassing. And, you know, whenever we try and put math on it, it breaks, you know? And I just feel like I have occasionally been in true awe, like awesome as in the original sense of the word awe. This happens to me sometimes, you know, when I'm driving back from a from a, some time in the mountains or in meditation or whatever. And it is just so terrifying to me, like how vast. And I guess the reason it is scary, it's like the bigger the infinity is, the smaller I am. And if the infinity is truly infinite, then I am basically non-existent. I think that's how I end up in a place of fear. And if the infinite wasn't infinite, like if the universe wasn't fully, truly infinite, then at least I had a minuscule part of it that was measurable and that was there. And the funny thing is, like, I can feel there. I am there in my body. I'm having thoughts. I exist. I am pretty sure I exist. And so many other things exist. So many actions, so many storylines, so many emotions, so many feelings and music and movies and love and all these things that exist, but not just for me, right? You also feel love. You also listen to music. You also have all these moments. And it just makes me feel so insignificant. And like coming to terms with that is, that's a little scary. You know, I'm not going to lie.
It's interesting that, so there's the way I understand what you're saying is the vastness of infinity not only puts a perspective on your life and your thoughts and your time on Earth, but it also makes you feel as if you don't matter, because it hasn't, it's nothing compared to everything else and everyone else.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, and there's some relief in that too, right? Because either everything matters, like every action you take, every decision you make has an impact and matters. But if the infinite is truly infinite, then nothing matters, right? I could set off a nuclear bomb in my backyard tomorrow, but against the vastness of the infinity, it pales. It doesn't matter. I'm sure my neighbors would be grumpy with me. But, you know, on like a galactic and infinite time scale, nothing matters. And that, there is something in there that makes me just a little sad because, you know, yeah, it's. I like the idea of that when I'm gone, or when this body is gone, there is a mark of me on the world somewhere that meant something to someone. And I don't have to change the world, right? I don't fully expect that this podcast will actually result in us figuring out what the meaning of life is. If we did, that would have a huge impact on the world. But I also think there is something in there that is just really kind of, it makes me feel a little forlorn.
What springs to mind, or the thought that I have in my head, is that 10,000 years ago, there's probably someone who was, I don't know, scribbling on a bit of papyrus or chipping some cuneiform into a piece of clay. And that was an amazing thing that they were writing there. And maybe they shared it with another person. But we have no idea that existed now.
Yeah.
We have no idea that it actually made any difference to the world, to anyone. And there are probably hundreds of millions of examples of that in our past.
Yeah.
Whether they were a Neanderthal crafting a little stone necklace for their child, or a pharaoh, or a Z-list pharaoh doing
yes,
their thing.
Yes.
That yeah, never quite made the big scrolls.
Well, and we don't have to go back 10,000 years either, right? Go back 100 years. Like, I'm sure my grandfather had some profound impacts on some people's lives. You know, he's not in history books. You know, once my generation dies out, nobody remembers him in the sense that real memory works. And by all accounts, he was an exceptional man who, you know, had, you know, a huge community impact and huge closeness with the people around him. And I barely remember him, right? And there's one of those things. I mean, I don't know why I keep getting hung up on the need to be remembered. You know, I don't actually really care about the cult of personality like that. But I also feel like when you hear stories of Madame Curie or Fermat or any of the big scientists that live behind their time, where people are still scratching their heads, like, how the fuck did they come up with this stuff? Right? I will not be that person. And a little part of me, or I may not be that person. And a little part of me is completely fine with that. And a different little part of me is like, what am I doing with my life if I'm not aiming to have at least put a little dent in the world somewhere?
Hmm. Yeah, I've struggled a little bit with this idea as well, in terms of, you know, if I don't make a decent impact in the world, what is my whole purpose of being here? Why am I here in the first place? I do believe, though, there's an element of luck in all of this, because there's so many people in the world who are doing, who are either incredibly intelligent or have access to the means, or they have abilities, but they aren't Gandhi or Einstein or, yeah, fill in the blanks with whichever historical character you want to put in there.
Yeah. Well, and the flip side is, you know, Carlos, you have people who love you deeply.
Hmm.
Right? And shouldn't that be enough? Like, the fact that somebody is, you know, as a matter of speech, willing to step in and take a bullet for you, means that there are people out there who you have a huge impact on. And those people, you know, long after you pass, you will have impacted their life. You know, you have kids, so that makes a huge difference. But also there, I mean, you've built a massive community of people's lives that you are affecting in a big way. And it is remarkable how often your name comes up in conversation just by virtue of the work you do. And while you have no real way of knowing the ripple effects of like the little silly things we do in life, you know, it's out there, it's happening, it's really on a profound level impacting people's lives. And so seen through that lens, of course you have a ongoing impact on the world.
I'm blushing now.
Oh man, this is the problem of doing an audio podcast.
No, it's lovely for you to say that, and it is, you know, my ego is feeling very well looked after now. And there's something around, I think this for me the thoughts going through my mind is this idea of maximizing the quality of our lived experiences and how, and it's a belief or a faith on my part that if we all focused on that, you know, and not in this, and it may sound selfish, but focus on us having lives that feel full. If we all did that, yes, some of us may be more famous than others, and some of us may be more remembered than others, but we all benefit in different ways. Rather than striving to be somewhere else or someone else, being able to do or create things that we think we should be able to, or we should create or do, because that's how we make our mark or create meaning and purpose in our lives, as opposed to, how do we just make the experiences we have as full and rich as possible? And if they make an impact, then great. But otherwise, we've had a great life.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, dude, I feel so happy and full and heart open and delighted by this conversation, as I knew I would. I mean, that's why I invited you to come and talk to me. I do have one question that I love to close on, which is, like, do you have like a mantra or a guiding principle or something that you come back to, like when life is a little bit shitty, that helps you settle in and pull yourself back out or make decisions?
Oof, there's a lot there. There's a few things that always bring to mind. I think when it comes to just interacting with people and interacting with the world, and this is maybe part of my Catholic upbringing, but it's something I think it's also come from my experience of being bullied, is do other to others as you'd like to be done to yourself. This whole feeling of just don't be a cunt, because would you like that to someone else to be a cunt to you? Or show people love, because that's what you would really enjoy feeling yourself. And so that for me has always been a strong guiding principle. And then I think also when things are really tough in a very dark way, I always think like, well, there's always someone else out there who's having a tougher life than you.
So. Right. Yeah. Well, it's a perspective thing that we said at the top of the show, right? It's just having that little bit of like balance in yourself that makes you go, okay, yeah, I've got this. And that's just beyond powerful.
I think that's for me the importance of connection, with connecting in the sense of yourself on one hand, but connecting with the world, going out there, meeting people, talking to people, finding out about people, understanding people's lives and journeys, and because it stops you from overemphasizing the hardships and the triumphs in your own life when you see it in context of other people achieving many greater things than you have, but also other people having much shittier times than you have.
Yes.
And I think the more we're able to see each other and what we've all been through, a bit like I feel happens at altitude.
Yeah.
The more we feel like, okay, it ain't so bad. And I ain't so big.
Yeah. Right. Oh. Dude, I am so glad that you freed up some time to come and talk to me, and I can't wait to share this with the world. Thank you so much.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it, and I have been grateful for the opportunity to go on this meandering thought journey.
Is there any other thought journey? I feel like they always just careen up in directions.
That's where it should be.